Banks have so much money on deposit, they're telling their large corporate clients, we don't want any more of your money. With job openings at record highs, you might also be surprised to find out that quits are at record highs. We're also going to go visit our friend Milton Friedman to learn about how higher consumer prices can actually be deflationary. We've got a CPI preview, and some of you are even asking, is this finally the big bond breakout? Or is there maybe one last pullback to come? All that and more on today's Macro Show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. Before we get into all of this, before we get into the headline story, tomorrow, big announcement coming. There's going to be a special show. Version 3.1 of Momentum Timer Pro comes out. Now, some of you don't even know what this is. And some of you are on it. Some of you have unsubscribed. 3.1, major shift from the current version. All new, well, major updates, just huge. New algorithms, it's way better, better format and everything. How do you sign up for this thing? Because right now it's free. All you have to do is go to the Momentum Timer Pro website, which I'll update the image after today's show. Click here to get your free subscription. And again, it's at my cost, so you've got really nothing to lose. And if it all works out, what you're going to find out is we've got an algorithm running now that does a really good job of finding bottoms across a broad range of asset classes. So stay tuned for that tomorrow, again, special episode. So what we're hearing from the banks now is they've got too much money. And you'd be surprised. Here it is, Wall Street Journal. Banks to companies, no more deposits, please. Some banks in Washington, deposits are encouraging corporate clients to spend the cash in their business or move it elsewhere. But where can they move it to? There's really no other options. In fact, if we come down here, we will find out, you see here, like Verizon held $10.2 billion in cash or equivalents at the end of the first quarter, up 45% from a year earlier. And then somewhere, I don't know where it went, but there was a big number of where it went from something to like a trillion. Here, let's see if we can find that. There it is. Bank deposits have continued to surge this year. Between late March and May 26, they rose by $411 billion to $17.09 trillion, according to the latest data. And all of a sudden, this shows up in this reverse repo that some people are making a really big deal about. Hey, this is a giant problem. And we've talked about on this show that the real problem is a repo issue. This is reverse repo. And reverse repo is when banks have too much cash and they don't want that cash. They need actual treasury securities to back it. So they go to the Fed and they swap it. But we're at $500 billion now in reserve of reverse repo. You can see it here today, $502.904 billion awarded at 0% interest rate, just so banks can just get rid of some of this cash for one night. This is an overnight loan. And some people are worried. You've heard some people talking about this is going to blow up the system. This is going to break things. And I'm not overly convinced that it will. Because one of the reasons is the Fed has plenty of T-bills and T-notes that the banks want to continue doing this. There's also not much of a cap that the Fed has to deal with. Here you can see on the implementation notes from back in April 29th at the last FOMC meeting, conduct repurchase agreement operations to support effective policy implementation and the smooth functioning of short-term U.S. dollar funding markets. Again, you know, people that don't understand repo and reverse repo is to stabilize money markets. So what happens if you have too much cash sitting in the banks? What direction would money market rates go? Well, they go down. Now, have you looked at what you're getting paid in your money market accounts? I stopped looking because it's really kind of pointless. But do you know what would happen if they go much lower? Yeah, they go negative. Well, that's a problem. So the Fed needs to stabilize it by pulling this cash out overnight, giving the banks treasury securities, and they do it through what's called reverse repo. Now, in my perspective, they can do this for a long time. The Fed's got, you know, trillions of dollars of securities, treasury securities on their balance sheet, so that's not an issue. Some people say, but what happens if they blow out the limit? Well, check this out. The Fed is instructed to conduct overnight reverse repurchase agreement operations at an offering rate of 0% with a per counterparty limit of $80 billion per day. The per counterparty limit can be temporarily increased at the discretion of the chair, meaning anytime Fed Chairman Powell wants, if he needs to, he can say, look, we're just going to raise the limit. And then at the next FOMC meeting, they can revise it. And how many counterparties did we see today? We saw 59. So there's still capacity here for the Fed to do this. And again, without any problems. The Fed chair can raise the counterparty limit above $80 billion. And I'm sure we'll get more answers on this in the FOMC meeting, which should be, I believe, next week. So we'll be interested to see if the Fed FOMC raises that limit up or has any comment about it. And I'm sure they're going to get asked about it because there is one long-term solution to this. You know, what is the problem? Banks have too much cash, not enough of the right collateral, right treasury securities. Well, what happens every month? The U.S. Treasury issues new debt, and we're running a deficit. So over time, what should happen is this reverse repo need should go down as more of the correct collateral, whatever it is the banks want, enters the system. Problem solved. At least that's the way it should be. Again, how much of this could lead to a complete system collapse? I don't know. This is not a problem we're used to seeing. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out for sure. Let's take a look at the economic data. Certainly some interesting things there. We can go back to Tuesday. German industrial production month over month fell 1%. So now we're starting to see, you know, this was in April, the global economy potentially starting to slow down. Another place I like to look is imports and exports. Now we'll start with France. Now why do I care about imports and exports? Because what should be happening? I want you to think about this. If the global economy is expanding, then what should imports and exports do? Right, they should be expanding. And if the global economy is frozen, if it's peaking, then they should be about the same. And if it's shrinking, well, then they should shrink too. So that's what's really interesting about import and exports. And we look to France and we see that they're virtually unchanged from March. So there's not a lot of change. French imports were up a little bit and exports were up a little bit. So not much of a change, showing that perhaps, you know, we're starting to see some potential indications beyond the factory PMI data, which looks like it's peaking. We see it here in French exports and imports. Let's see. Let's go on to into the U.S. data. Ah, more imports and exports. How about the U.S.? Imports fell. Now, isn't that interesting? So think about that. The United States, right, the largest importing nation in the world, the number of imports fell. Now, there could be supply chain issues that are related to that, but there also were what we're going to look for is demand, because what happens when retail shelves get filled up and wholesale shelves get filled up? Well, you don't need to be ordering more stuff and have, because you don't have a place to store it. You can only store so much stuff in warehouses, only so much at the docks where the ships come in, and you can only park so many ships out in the ports for so long. So we're looking to see, is there a slowdown here? Now, exports, let's see what they did. They actually went up a little bit. So we're seeing some potential indication that the U.S. economy may be also peaking. So this is very interesting. How about Canada? Look to our neighbors up north. We see exports went down and we see imports went down. So again, another indication in April that perhaps things were indeed peaking. Let's take a look at the job openings and labor turnover survey. I think there's something I'm missing here. Oh yes, this National Federation of Independent Businesses Small Business Optimism Index looks like it's rolling over. It's not even back as pre-pandemic highs, nowhere even close. It's sitting at 99.6. Looks like it's rolling over as perhaps small businesses may be desperate to hire, although they're not hiring. They're not trying very hard to, but their optimism is starting to wane a little bit. So keep an eye on that. So this is a job openings and labor turnover survey. Record high, 9.286 million jobs flown available for workers that we know businesses are not trying very hard to hire. But what you might find staggering is the quits. Look at this. We, in the same month, in April, 3.952 million people said, take this job and shove it, at a point where, again, we have record openings, which means there should be upward pressure on wages. So are these people leaving the workforce? Are they switching jobs? We don't know. But still, you would not expect to see 3.952 million people quit. Wow, that is pretty crazy. Yesterday's three-year Treasury note auction, as you might know, went off with very good demand. Wasn't the strongest ever, but it was very good, well-received, and interest rates obviously went down in the overnight from that. Taking a move over to China, looking at their CPI month over month. Again, there's no relationship between this and the United States, but I just want to point out we went from deflationary -0.32, still deflationary at -0.2. So it did rise a little bit, but it is still a deflationary print. The year over year went from 0.9 to 1.3. Producer prices skyrocketed to 9. Now, just so you know, there is not generally a correlation between PPI and CPI. Some people want to find that, but there's generally is not. Moving over into Germany, exports up 0.3%, so definitely slowing from its trend of 1.3 the month before. The imports went from 7.1 to -1.7. So again, you know, potential more signs that import and exports are telling us that the global economy is peaking out. Mortgage applications fell 3.1%, with refinance applications dropping a whopping 5%. So, you know, this is important in credit creation. You want to see demand for mortgages, especially in the purchase. If you're going to see housing prices continue to go up, see demand continue to go up, you need purchases to continue to go up, and they're falling. We're seeing trend lower in both purchase and refinance. Looking at wholesale inventories, month over month continued to rise despite all the factory survey data saying that inventories are way too low. And then moving into crude oil. Now, I want to preface this as there isn't any problems in this report at all. In fact, everything's fine, but we're potentially seeing some leading indicators, and I want to point those out to you, that perhaps there isn't that much demand, or there's falling demand as prices go up, which is how we're going to lead into, you know, learning something from Milton Friedman, which is really important because, you know, right now a lot of people, some people think that, you know, this is like 2013 and this is reflationary, and they have me and a small number of people say, no, financial conditions are real tight, there's a dollar shortage, this is not going to end very well. And so how do you figure out who's going to be right or wrong? Well, let's look at the crude oil inventory data, and then we'll kind of get into kind of why this could be a leading indicator and why it's something we need to watch every week to see what's going on with consumers. So let's look at the data. So overall, there's nothing wrong with this report. Inventories dropped 5.2 million barrels. Gasoline inventories went up way more than expected, 7 million barrels. And distilled stocks went up 4.4 million barrels. And I said, wow, that was big. That you're talking, you know, almost 11 and a half million build in product. Right, you are. This is only the second week and they're still below, you know, their 3 or 5 year trend. So they're okay. The question is this a beginning of a trend higher in product build? Now, this is somewhat normal to see an increase, maybe not this level, because one thing we are finding out is refineries are, you know, running over 90% now, so they're doing their part to produce more product for the summer. The question is, will there be demand there? And so one thing that I'm looking at, and we talked about this last week, is will this trend of product builds continue, or is it just temporary going into the summer as demand will heat up? Now, one thing I want to present to you is we got to go talk about Milton Friedman now. And the reason is higher prices when financial conditions are tight can be deflationary because they get rejected. So when there's not enough money to support higher prices, this is what I want you to think. There's not enough money out there. So if prices go up, people can't afford them. And so what does a business have a choice? They can keep the price there and keep it on their shelf and not sell it for a while. Hopefully that one buyer comes in. Or eventually they can lower it to clear off the inventory because they got more inventory they've got on order coming in and they need to sell that too. So if financial conditions are tight, if there's a dollar shortage, then what we should see is consumers not be able to afford things. And what are some of those drivers where we might see consumers saying, look, I can't afford these higher energy prices? Well, we've got the dollar shortage. We know incomes are falling because starting middle of this month, a couple states are going to drop their extended unemployment benefits, and then that's going to continue to roll through until September where they're all gone. We know at some point that student loan debt payments are going to come back. We know at some point people are going to have to start paying on rents and mortgages to whatever degree people are not paying. So we know that's coming back. And if people have less income because they've gone back to work and they're making less, or they're trying to find a job and they can't, it's hard to believe they can't find one because there's plenty of people hiring. They're just, or saying they're going to hire, they're just not actually hiring. The question then becomes is, will there even be much of a travel season this summer, as people have already been off and now are forced to go back to work or spend their time to find work? So we have to look to Milton Friedman to see what's going on here and see if he can help us. And he says, as an empirical matter, Low interest rates are a sign that monetary policy has been tight. And mind you, interest rates are low overall, starting to head lower, in the sense that the quantity of money has grown slowly. He's talking about the money supply now, the M2, this right here. The money supply, he's saying, is growing too slowly at 18% year over year. Isn't that interesting? Because interest rates are still low. Goes on to say, high interest rates are a sign that monetary policy has been easy in the sense that the quantity of money has grown rapidly. So despite the fact that the M2 is growing and has at 18 and has been upwards of 27% year over year, it's not enough. It's not high enough to drive interest rates that high. The broadest facts of experience run in precisely the opposite direction from which the financial community and academic economists have generally taken for granted. So now the question then is, how is it possible that with the money supply this high, and let's take a look at interest rates, let's go to the 30-year here and see what's going on. We can see the 30-year is kind of in this topping pattern right on the edge of this cliff looking to break down, which we'll get into, you know, more of my thoughts on what will happen in the bond market here in the next couple of days. You can see that this is telling us interest rates are low. We know that because we can zoom out and say, yeah, they're relatively low historically. If we go to the monthly chart, yeah, they're pretty low, and they're rolling over telling us financial conditions are tightening. That's what Milton Friedman is saying. So how does that lead to a rejection of higher prices? Well, again, consumers don't have the money. So I want you to be thinking about that. Now, how do we know that financial conditions are indeed tight beyond the interest rate market and there's a dollar shortage? Well, we can go to the money multiplier, which is the M2 divided by the monetary base, and we see it's declining. And what that says is the demand for money through quantitative easing is growing more than proportional to the supply of money. So think about that, more than proportional, more than 1-to-1 would be more than proportional. So the denominator, the monetary base, is growing more proportional to the supply of money. Let's take a look at today's 10-year treasury auction. Also, just like the 3-year, met with strong demand. In fact, this is one of the best 10-year auctions. And yet that didn't drive interest rates down hardly much from the auction. Low yield was at zero. The bid to cover is above the six-month average. And the dealer take was well below their norm, which is over usually $6 to $7 billion. There was a strong demand for foreign bidders. They must know what's going on. Now let's talk about the CBI preview. So again, you know, tomorrow we've got the 30-year auction. Now we've got the CPI report. Everyone's saying there's going to be a big year-over-year percentage change. And there could be. It might be over 3%. It might not be. And I will suggest to you, that actually doesn't matter. What really matters is a month-over-month change. And we've been looking at the data and seeing the month-over-month from other parts of the world has been disinflationary, where it's actually smaller than the month before. So now the question is, what could we see in tomorrow's CPI report? Well, you'll see this chart, maybe crude oil, and consumer prices are up here saying that, well, crude oil is not going up enough to validate higher consumer prices. But here's something interesting. If we take crude now and we put it on a year over year, it falls down here, way down here. It says 0.8 is where crude now. They're both running percent from a year ago, suggesting that at some point, the percent from a year ago of the CPI, you can see when crude goes down, that the CPI can peak and then starts to fall, that crude is telling us that perhaps that we will see a disinflationary month over month, but we still yet may get one last big year over year. And that is the question for the bond market and the sellers. Because remember, you know, when you look at the market, it's a battle between buyers and sellers. And we've seen the sellers continue trying to push prices down in the bond market, and buyers have been there just taking everything they can get. So let's take a look at the Wyckoff charts again and kind of go forth from there. So here we see the Wyckoff chart says, look, when there's a big move out, it's usually rejected. The final, you know, just when you think you're home free, it's rejected, gets into a little consolidation and breaks out. And then there's another version, says the same thing. So let's go look at the chart now of bonds today. We'll go to TLT, and what do we see? It broke out up here, and it's running right into the same spot things happened 90 days ago. Well, let's go look at what happened 90 days ago. Price is at 141.69. We'll zoom in a little bit, and you can see right here, 141.69, this is where sellers drove prices right back down to around 140. So it almost tells you that, hey, that maybe the sellers were waiting for tomorrow to see what the CBI report is before they jam prices back down one last time into this level of support. So now what's been resistance at 140 may become support if prices reverse. And what are the probabilities of that? Well, if we go back, we can go back to the a prior bottom here, and you can see the prices came down. They broke the 50-day moving average, got rejected, looked like they were breaking out. There it was, pull back. Looked like it was breaking out, pull back, and then go. Is that the only instance we see? No, not really. We can go back down to here, and you can see broke the 50-day, came back down, and then went. And let's see, there's probably some more if we continue to look. How about here? Yeah, crosses a 50-day, doesn't really retrace. This one back here did. It came, looked like it's breaking out, retraced down, and went. I don't think we get a full retrace this time. But the other thing I'll caution you on, just something to think about, is we're seeing this rise on red candles, and normally you want to see green here. Doesn't mean you have to get it that way, but it just goes to show, my friends, that we are super, super close to this thing breaking out. And so when you look at the money multiplier and you take into account quantitative easing and you understand Milton Friedman, you realize that financial conditions are tight and tightening. This is not reflation. This is not back, 2013, the QE2, QE3 era. This is financial conditions are tight and are getting tighter. And I'll leave you with this. Remember, the bond market tends to lead the equity market up or down. In this case, down, yields going down on average by 3 months. Go look at the relationship, you'll see. And with that, we'll wrap up today's show. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for subscribing. Be sure to check out tomorrow's show for the new edition of the new version, 3.1 of Momentum Timer Pro. It's pretty phenomenal. Hopefully, it'll be worth your trouble, and we'll have some fun with seeing what we can do with that. Anyways, I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investor or other advice. Serial is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by a social security financial instrument or participate in any particular training strategy. This video was paired by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, business expresses this video that do not affect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.